Welcome back to the Hardline. Enter at your own risk.
We're back here at Johnny Londoff Chevrolet, right off of 270 in Florissant. Eric Messersmith, Cam Jansen, TJ Moe, John Hadley, Hannah Yates. Joining us now on the Ryan Kelly phone lines is Michael Lombardi. He has been involved with several NFL organizations, from a scout to a consultant, director of pro personnel. He was the general manager and VP of player personnel for the Browns, and then recently assistant to the coaching staff for the Patriots. And he wrote an article for TheRinger.com called "The Rams Forever War. Can a team that has been defined by a losing culture for years turn things around in a new city? If so, it'll need to start at the top." And he joins us now on the Ryan Kelly phone lines. How are you, Michael? Michael, are you there?
I am. I sure am. How are you?
Doing well.
Hey, Mike. John Hadley here. How are you?
Hello, John. How are you?
I have no complaints besides my face.
That's true.
Hey, Big Mike, and Michael Lombardi is one of those guys. TJ, you know this. When Michael Lombardi talks football, you listen.
Mm-hmm. I appreciate
obviously, I have followed his career and now follow him to the Ringer. And sure enough, he brings up my Rammies. I thought it was a phenomenal piece, Mike. And I know that with some of your relationships with the Rams, you know from the inside what has happened with the organization. I would have to imagine for you it was sort of a fun write.
You know, I think the more we're seeing pro sports, I think culture has become such a prevalent factor. When you can see teams like the Patriots, and we talk about no dynasties, but I think the reality is culture really matters. And for the Rams, it really has mattered, other than the four seasons when they won 10-plus games. You know, they've had 22 seasons in the last 26 years where they've been 800 or below or 500 or below. I mean, that's just not like a fender bender. That's a pattern of bad performance that goes without saying. And I think at some point, what I tried to say in the article was at some point you have to take an honest assessment of where you are. You can't keep doing status quo, which the Rams continually do. We need a quarterback coach. Okay, let's hire Sean McVay, even though he's 31 years old and he's going to compete against Bill Belichick and Pete Carroll and some of those people. It's a tough job.
It is a tough job, and as you know, I mean, I consider John Shaw a personal friend, still see John when I'm in Los Angeles, so it's tough for me to analyze him personally because there's some personal involved. But that said, I will say in reading your article, I think you hit on a couple of things that's very important, because I think Shaw probably one or too many times hired guys, giving them the benefit of the doubt, trying to treat men like men. And they simply took advantage of the opportunity. If there was one thing that I'd tell John Shaw, looking back, you should have had a much more firm grasp on this thing and force-fed a Rams type of football, Rams way, and had people follow you as opposed to them just doing what they wanted.
Right. You know, it's the independent contractor theory. You know, so he hires an independent contractor. He installs what he wants to do. The guy's not good enough. The Peter principle. You know, usually when you hire a number two guy from somebody else's organization, they're in a number two position because they do that job really well. Will they do the number one job well? That remains to be seen. And I think what I tried to convey in the article was that I have great respect for John Shaw. I think he's really smart. I think what I said in the article, he made some incredible trades, but he never built an infrastructure. He never built a way to where he could rely upon his brilliance and it could magnify his own brilliance. And sometimes the brilliance of people is when they step back and allow others to do their job effectively, but give them a mission statement. I mean, Warren Buffett's not exactly making every single trade in his company. He has a broad global view of what's happening, and then he instills those principles within the people. And I think that's where the Rams have missed. And then the torch has been passed from John to Kevin Demoff. I mean, look, this is a team that has incredible cap issues. I mean, they're paying Tremaine Johnson over $16 million. They have 10 guys on their payroll that make significant money. Four of them that they redo their contracts. Now, it gets a little dicey there because Alex Ogletree, they picked up the option. That would be number five. And really, you know, Roger Saffold was a deal that they redid because the Raiders flunked him on a physical. So that would be the sixth deal. So you're talking about a team that is in this mess because this is the mess they've wanted. You know, one thing about the NFL, you are always who you want to be. If you want to be a fat team, you'll draft fat players. You want to be a slow team, you'll draft slow players. If you want to be a poor cap team, you'll overpay players. That's who the Rams are. I mean, Tavon Austin for 12 touchdowns that average it over $10 million a cap. I mean, that's unheard of. Could you imagine what Bill Walsh would do with that contract?
So, Michael, you mentioned building an infrastructure, and I know you spent 3 years with the Patriots. It seems to me that, like, Belichick is the guy who controls virtually everything over there. Is it Robert Kraft? And because Belichick, obviously, works as the general manager as well. Isn't it him who does a lot of that over there instead of the owner?
Well, I think the owner sets the agenda. You know, look, Pittsburgh has won. They've had three coaches. They've had Chuck Knoll, they have Bill Cowher, and now they have Mike Tomlin. The reason they win is because the Rooney family has a way of doing business, and it's their mission statement. It's the way they handle things, and that's the culture that they lay down the foundation. John tried to operate under the Al Davis culture, which is the owner controls everything, and if you need something, see the owner. Well, that doesn't work, and I think that what Kraft has done a wonderful job of is he's allowed Bill to install a culture that fits. We had it going in Cleveland when Bill was there the first time. Unfortunately, there were some times where Art Modell, the owner, just didn't understand what we were trying to do in terms of culture. He always wanted to placate to the media and listen to some things. When you're doing this, as what happened to Josh McDaniels in Denver, it can become dicey. It can become very critical, and you could lose your job because people don't always buy in when you're trying to establish a new culture. And if you have rabbit ears, and I think John Shaw at times listened to too many people. He was wired in the league office. I put this in the column. He listened to a lot of different people in the league, and this is the only industry in the world where you rely on your partners to help you. I mean, ABC doesn't call NBC up to ask him what sitcom to put on the air. It's remarkable. It's the only business where they actually call one another to ask for advice. What if you make your own decisions like Robert Kraft did? Because remember, when Kraft hired Belichick, it was not popular. When he traded for Belichick, you go back and read those articles, he was laughed at. Because Belichick was seen to be a failure in Cleveland. He was not popular with the media. In fact, in the book that I wrote for John Shaw, I recommended that he talk to him, and it wasn't a popular thing to do. And so, therefore, they didn't do it. And I think that requires you to have conviction of your own heart. And if you don't have that and you listen to too many people, you end up like the Rams, 22 losing seasons.
We're joined by Mike Lombardi, longtime NFL executive on the Ryan Kelly phone lines.
Michael, T.J. Moe here. You know, you mentioned Cleveland, and when you talk about
him, you signed a deal with the Patriots, TJ, right?
Yes, sir, I did. I was there.
Okay, yeah,
well,
you were there. The receiver. I know you now. I see. That's how old you get. I talk to people that I scouted. That's how old.
Mike, we hear about it every day.
Oh God, thanks,
let me
Mike.
Tell you, Mike. Tom Brady's the greatest.
Oh,
yada yada.
They're
yada.
Best friends.
Best. Yeah. They showered together.
Don't back down. Preach it, TJ.
Never would, Michael. So anyway, you talked about Cleveland, and you spent a lot of time there. You mentioned the first time Belichick, when Belichick was there, and you were there from 87 through 96. But then you were back there as a general manager, 13 and 14. Isn't that a place that has the same infrastructure issue that the Rams does? I mean, these are probably the two worst-run franchises in sports
no
over
doubt.
The last 20 years.
And the problem is, TJ, is Jimmy Haslam, the first question he always asked me when I was interviewing for the job is, what makes a good owner? And I would tell him. And he kept asking the question a year onto the job. Like, at some point, you have to stop asking that question and behave like a good owner. He worked in Pittsburgh. He was a minority owner of the Pittsburgh Steelers. He saw how the Rooney family operated. But for whatever reason, Jimmy is one of those guys who wants to listen to a lot of different people in the league office and outside and sports writers and other people that come into touch with it. And that's the quickest way to have a bad franchise you can ever do. Your owner has to be able to have a conviction. Look, you don't need a rich owner. You don't need a guy who's willing to spend money. What you need is somebody who's going to give you a mission statement, who's going to allow you to put the plan in place and then not buckle the first time you hit the first bad wave or the first storm that comes a part of you. And I think that's what happens to a lot of teams.
And you mentioned, Michael, the ownership. And look, John Hadley loves Stan Kroenke. I think he's on the payroll. I think Stan Kroenke is a crook and a charlatan and a terrible human being. But in addition to that, he's also an awful sports owner in the sense of winning. He knows how to make money, but you look at not just the Rams, look at the Colorado Avalanche, look at the Denver Nuggets, look at his team over in England, Arsenal, they're awful, and they're calling for his head. So it starts really with the owner in this situation, right?
Well, I think so. You know, look, McDonald's didn't make money as McDonald's and Ray Kroc from St. Louis from selling those milkshake machines. He didn't make money until he realized he wasn't in the restaurant business, he was in the real estate business. And I think where Stan Kroenke has to figure out is what business is he really in? Is he in the real estate business? and that's why he's building the park at Inglewood and all that? Or is he in the winning business of sports? And I'm not sure that that answer is always coherent, and I think that's where the disconnect happens. And a lot of these owners, they talk about winning. Really, it's not that complicated. They have these incredibly successful businesses outside of pro football that they don't listen to anybody. Nobody tells them how to run those businesses. But when they come into the NFL and they sit in there with the 31 other owners, they seem to want to listen to what that says. Pro football is some unique culture that no one would know unless you've actually lived it. It's a business. And operate it like a business, you know, and understand it and allow people to do their job and give them a mission statement and give them a plan that you could put in place. And I think the Rams, that's something they've never had. They don't have it right now. They're going to hope Sean McVay, if he can win 8 or 9 games, they're going to think they've turned the corner. And you know what will happen? The next year they'll win 6 and wonder what happened.
Michael Lombardi, I know this much right now, big man. There's times in life that you go through this business and you're happy to meet people. And it was my pleasure having a chance to finally meet you last year and to continue following you over to the Ringer. Tell folks a little bit about the Ringer. I'm a big Bill Simmons guy. You, Bill Simmons, a pretty impressive group of people have made the Ringer a must read.
Yeah, the Ringer's a great place for me because I really want to write and I want to be able to talk about these things that you can't really do on FS1. I love working for Fox Sports 1, but it was difficult to kind of go into these kind of depths conversations because, you know, you're debating back and forth on things. And the Ringer allows me a platform to write, which I really want to do. I'm working on a book about my experience in the NFL. It's not my memoirs. It's basically a little bit about what I wrote about with the Rams, is what I've seen and observed from football and kind of how I see football being really misunderstood a little bit, you know, and I don't think people really get it. I think they hear it on television, but I don't think they really understand what's going on. It's a chess match on grass. So I'm writing that book, and it gives me time to do that. So the Ringer's a great platform for me to kind of talk about the things I want to talk about in a way, in a style, in a manner that's conducive to the way I try to preach football.
Hey, Mike, I want to ask you about Gronkowski for a little bit here. I know he's a hell of a player, and all the guys probably love him, and I know he does probably a ton of charity work and good things around the community. But I've been seeing him too much lately. Like, he's everywhere, and some of it's good and some of it's not good. But my point is, he's doing too much stuff. I mean, he's in the paper for the dumbest things here and there. And again, it's not the worst things in the world, but it's too much. And when is it time that New England's going to be like, okay, let's reel him back a little bit here? Because right now it's kind of getting out of control. He's just too many places at once, and he's kind of getting himself in trouble a little bit. So when is it time to reel a guy like that back a little bit?
Well, I think Belichick really is good about this. I think he understands if it's getting in the way of what ultimately is the mission of Rob, then I'll roll it back. But there's two Rob Gronkowskis. There's a serious guy that walks into one Patriot place, knows what he's doing. He works hard. He has a really low body fat. And this guy takes great care of himself, doesn't drink. I mean, you see him partying, but there's time and a place for everything with Rob. And I think there's the personal image. There's an imagery of Rob, and then there's the reality of Rob. And I think they're two different things. And that doesn't really kind of co-mingle. I mean, unfortunately, he has not been durable. He wasn't durable in college when he was a no one. I think this has been his problem. He's a unique athlete. He's a unique player at that position. I mean, he's a completely game changer. But this is the first time the Patriots have gone undefeated since he's been hurt. So they've been able to understand what they needed to do once he left the game. Last year they had Martellus Bennett. This year they have Dwayne Allen. They'll have James Shaughnessy. They'll have other tight ends to kind of offset, because the Patriots want to run that two tight end offense to create the mismatches that they need from the line of scrimmage to be able to dictate the terms for Tom Brady.
Michael, after your comments about Jamie Collins, Bill Belichick called you one of the smartest people he knows, and you were there for 3 years. What did you learn? Like, looking inside of that, how did they sustain this kind of success in a league that is built to make sure that doesn't happen? They try as hard as they can to create parity and make sure the worst teams get to draft first, and they give incentives for people to go elsewhere and the salary cap and everything else. How do you do that and do it for this long?
You know, I'm old, so in 1984 was my first draft, and I'm running around the draft room. We had 12 rounds. We started at 5 in the morning. I was working for the 49ers, and we started at 5 in the morning, and I think we were in round 8 or 9, and it might have been like 1 in the morning. And I'm running around like a chicken without a head, and Coach Wall says to me, "What's your problem? What are you doing?" I said, "Well, you know, Coach, the Falcons did this, the Falcons did that." He said, "Hey, Michael, look, let me explain something real quick to you. You were only competing against 8 teams in this league. When the Redskins do something or when the Giants do something, you let me know. But don't worry about those other teams that we're not competing against. They might win once in a while, but they're rarely going to win. And that lesson has been with me. That was when we had 28 teams in the league. And I always believed you're either one of the eight or you're not. Now, the Rams are not one of the eight, whether they're in St. Louis, whether they're in Anaheim, whether they're in Los Angeles. They're not one of the eight. And, you know, and you have to be one of the eight. And I think that's why. People see it as a league of parity, but the reason is the Patriots maintain. It's getting easier for Belichick. How is it getting easier for Belichick? Because the level of competition's gone way down. He used to be able to, you know, there was a time in the NFC East when Belichick was competing against Tom Landry. He was competing against Joe Gibbs. He was competing against Buddy Ryan. I mean, Bill Parcells, Bill Walsh. I mean, these are great coaches of their day. Dan Reeves. Now you're talking about independent contractors, guys that just run one side of the football, and they're calling themselves head coaches. You go into New England's office, you know, TJ, you've been in meeting rooms. You ask Belichick who the L4 is on the kickoff team, he'll tell you. You ask probably 95% of the head coaches in the NFL who the L4 on the kickoff team is, they'll have no idea. And that's the difference.
Michael Lombardi joining us on the Ryan Kelly phone lines. The Hardline, powered by Johnny Londoff Chevrolet, longtime NFL executive. You mentioned you started under Bill Walsh. You've been in football forever. It's kind of interesting, the developments with the game. I saw a story that Drew Brees is starting a flag football league, or he's involved in flag football as an alternative to tackle for young kids. Warren Sapp came out the other day and said, he said basically he didn't think kids should play football until they get to high school. What do you think the future of the game is? Is football under serious threat from the concussion issue of being at least radically different in the future than it is now?
I'm happy to see the youth of our America not play those kind of padded football. First of all, I think there's too many guys that think they're Belichick as the young coaches trying to coach this game. I think the best thing is to have youth football, let them play flag football, run around, be athletic, make it a space game. That's what it's becoming. I don't think football is going to, as the league's becoming safer by the way. Look, when I first started in the league, you know, you had to have a safety that could knock you out in the middle of the field. Now that's, you know, if you have a guy that's too aggressive, he's going to be out of the game. So you have to be careful. And I think they've done a good job of protecting the players in terms of the rules. Football is going to be always a violent sport. That's what makes it so appealing to most of America. I don't think we're going to see much of a change, but I think what we've seen over the last 10 years is we're a passing league. This whole notion that we have to run the ball to establish it is a crock. I mean, you run the ball. The reality of the NFL is you have to throw the ball to get the league. And that's evidenced by, if you go through the first half stats and just look at first half run pass ratios, there's only one team that ran the ball more in the first half than actually threw it. So we've seen a whole shift in how this game is being played. If you want to score points, you got to throw the ball. The key to football today is establish the lead, not establish the run. Because when you establish the lead, then you can play defense much better. Defensive football must be complementary football. It can't be just you're going to line up and just be able to hold people down right. You can't do it. The rules won't let you.
Do you think the rules in the new CBA and not being able to practice as much as they could before has hurt the offensive lines? Because you watch guys now, and there's a couple of really good ones. Everybody knows about the Dallas Cowboys. The Oakland Raiders are also very good. There's a few. But largely across the league, it seems like the offensive lines struggle. And as you mentioned, it's a passing league, and a lot of it is short passing, so they compensate. But it seems like the changing of the rules to try to help the safety of the league is actually hurting the product amongst the lines.
No question, and I think it starts in college. Look, you guys are in Missouri. The Big 12 is right around the corner there. You know, I know Missouri plays in the Southeast, but the Big 12, they only allowed one pad of practice a week in the Big 12 during games. That's what they do. Guys are always in two-point stance. The shotgun formation in college football has hurt the passing game because linemen are in two-point stance. They're never in a three-point stance, so they're not really learning how to pass protect or run block. So that development as an offensive lineman in college has really taken a back seat. I think what you're going to start to see is more defensive players get converted over to offensive linemen from college, because what's happened now is the really good athletes are playing defense, and I think you need athletic guys to play offense. That's why a guy like, you know, George, the left tackle for Seattle, who's a basketball player, can go in the league and actually start as a pure rookie because he's athletic. It's hard to find him. I think college has done much of that, and I think that's the reason. And then, of course, not being able to develop players in pro football. You know, you used to be able to go into the indoor facility back in December and January with those young players and really drill them, not with pads, but really drill their footwork and their fundamentals, because playing offensive line is like being a golfer. You've got to drill those techniques and fundamentals every single day so that when you play under pressure or you swing under pressure, your swing holds up and your techniques hold up. And I think that's why we've seen a deficit. Now, the beautiful thing about the NFL is the smart guys like Belichick and Pete Carroll, they figure out a way to get around the rules. They figure out a way to change and be adaptive, whereas the other guys complain about them. That's what they see the difference. That's why it's become an easier league for them to compete with.
And I think to your point, seeing Dante Scarnecchia return to the Patriots and the impact that he had tells the whole story. So people talk about Tom Brady and Bill Belichick so much, and they're always lumped together. Do you think Belichick could have had a similar run if he didn't run into Tom Brady?
Well, it's the perfect storm. I think Belichick was going to be successful no matter who it was. I think you saw when Matt Castle had to play quarterback. I think you saw it when Jimmy Garoppolo played quarterback. It was a unique situation to get Tom in there, and I think Tom's made Bill a better coach, and Bill's made Tom a better player. I think it's the perfect. But one thing I know, being with Bill and being around Bill, the team was going to develop the right way. Brady's made it a lot easier for him, because when your best player sets the tone of intolerance, for anything that gets in the way of winning, that really is the best culture. The Rams don't have that. Why?
Mike, wrapping up here, thank you so much for your time today. Just a couple quickies based off the NFL Top 100 players list. Is Dak Prescott really one of the best 15 players in the NFL right now?
Well, look, it's voted on by the players, and I think Dak had a tremendous year for a rookie. I think it's going to be – I think when you're talking about rankings, you need time and you need history to be able to judge. But I thought Dak played extremely well. I thought Scott Linehan did a wonderful job with him in terms of how he utilized his skill set. He was much more accurate in the offense, and of course he had Zeke Elliott to help him take some of the pressure off. But look, I think the Cowboys did a really good job of taking what Dak did well and magnified it. Quarterbacks are like baseball stadiums. You guys are in St. Louis. The Cardinals have a philosophy how they build their team based on their stadium. Same thing with quarterbacks. You got to do the same thing. And I think the Cowboys were the perfect example of what they utilized in Dak Prescott's skill set, and what they were able to allow him to do made him much more effective. If he'd have gone somewhere else, maybe he wouldn't have. Look, the Raiders took the kid from Michigan State ahead of him, and in the same round. And the Cowboys were trying to trade up to get him. So I think what you're seeing there is the Cowboys understood him. They coached him in the Senior Bowl, and they knew what he could do.
I have one more question for you, but first I got to go back to the prima donna receiver.
Aaron Donald checked in at 15. I spent a training camp with him in St. Louis. I know St. Louis is a train wreck, but he's got to be a top 10 player in this league, right?
I don't see how he is. He's hard to – first of all, he's a Tuesday player. Guys that are Tuesday players, that means on Tuesday you're game planning to make sure they don't disrupt the game. Terrell Owens not being in the Hall of Fame is a crime. He's a Tuesday player. You go to the stadium on Sunday afternoon, you're worried about how you're going to cover T.O. He belongs in the Hall of Fame. Tuesday players belong in the Hall of Fame. Aaron Donald's a Tuesday player. You better make sure the protection is set all the time where he is. And your guard never wants to be one-on-one with him with a two-way go for Donald, or else he'll beat that guard. And if he does, it's your fault, not Donald's being a great player, because you need to make sure that you take Donald out of the game, and you got to line up to where he can do it. That's a Tuesday player.
Mike, the last thing for me is just I'm just wondering, have you ever just sat back Sunday morning, reading the newspaper, nice quiet morning before the game start, and think about the people that you've worked with? I mean, it's literally some of the best, the majority of the best of the best in this business during your era you've worked with. I mean, it's been an incredible career.
Yeah, it really has. I've been very blessed and fortunate to, and we didn't even talk about Al. I spent 10 years with Al, which in most people's life, that's 30 years. And I spent 10 years with Al. I've been really fortunate, and I've been blessed, and I've learned, and I've been able to learn from a lot of great people. And that's why, for me, my book's not going to be a memoir. My book is going to be a thank you to all the people that taught me a lot about football, that I want to help teach America about it.
Do you know when that's going to come out?
September of 2018.
Okay.
Very nice. Well, thank you again so much, Michael. We're
you bet, John,
very
anytime. TJ, you good to talk to you. Keep preaching the Patriot, will you?
Will do.
Thank you. Oh, he will.
Don't tell him that, Michael.
Bye-bye.
Thank you again, sir. Thank
See you, dude.
Michael Lombardi writes for The Ringer, longtime NFL executive. Check out his article, The Rams Forever War. It's really insightful about where things went wrong for that organization many, many years ago. And I think it's insightful beyond more than just sports. I think it really applies to any organization. Leadership and culture in any walk of life are really everything. And if you don't have those things in your organization.
My question is, like, did he really know who TJ was, or did you call him?
No, John, don't lie to me. Listen to me, Cam. Listen to me. Seriously, don't make me come over this table. Don't make me come over this table.
I don't believe it.
For a snack.
That says nothing about me and everything about the Patriots.
No, I knew he. In fact, I was telling TJ, say your name. While we were on air, I was trying to tell, because I knew Mike Lombardi. Mike Lombardi is one of the most fascinating guys that I've run across.
He's got a great memory.
In the last year and a half. I mean, I really feel fortunate to have had the chance to get to know him. I mean, he's as good as you think he is and knows what. But I knew for a fact he would know who TJ was.
Wow.
That's why I kept saying.
Believe
did
that.
I not keep saying to you, say your name?
He did.
Wait, did he say TJ was a Tuesday player?
Something like that.
Is that what he said?
More of a Wednesday player.
Player you have to prepare for on
Tuesday. He said
Tuesday.
Like a Monday player. That's your day off.
That's your day off. Right. The text line at 855-282-8255. This texter from the 314 says, anyone playing in the Dotem Open is going to be extremely disappointed. I'm going to crush all teams and take the trophy home with me.
I like it.
Oh, boy.
Who wrote that?
I think I know who that was.
Unnamed texter.
If that's who I think it is, he wins tournaments.
Oh, really?
Not because he's good, because he sucks. I'm sure he's listening to me right now. He sucks at golf. He sucks at golf. But you know what he does? He picks a pretty good crew.
He's got an eraser.
And one of the crew he has is Terry Yake.
Really?
Yes.
He wins tournaments,
and I hopefully somebody on this text line that's going to be in there beats this team.
I think the three of us, me, you, and TJ, will win that if we have like a Jordan Spieth-level golfer as our fourth. I think we could take it down.
I think the only way we could take it down, or anybody could beat this group, that he's setting up. And I'm telling you, that he goes and wins these trophies and he puts them up. It's all he does is golf. So he takes these trophies, he hangs them all up in his own separate room of golf tournament trophies. Somebody beat him and beat his ass. But I tell you this right now, before you go to that tournament, you better be evened out on some mentality, because otherwise you're not going to get through that 18 holes of golf. I'm telling you that right now, especially if you're going to have to beat my buddy, who has a couple ringers on that team. You're going to need to go to mentality and get re-upped, because it's by that 17th hole, you're going to be dragging ass, because that's just the way it is. It's summertime. You're playing a lot of golf. You need that extra energy to play 18 holes, get done with that, take your girl out for dinner, and do your thing afterwards if you catch my drift.
If you feel like
I didn't catch it. What was your drift?
Sex, Anna. He's talking about sex.
No, I'm talking about Game of Thrones. Watching Game of Thrones.
Okay.
What is wrong with you? I was talking about sex. But seriously, though, look, if you feel like you're tired, you're moody, you don't have any drive anymore, you might be suffer from low testosterone. I sure as hell was. TJ sure as hell wasn't. Eric, we just don't know about high estrogen, whatever. But look, if you have low energy, motivation, fatigue, things like that, you might be suffering from low testosterone. It is what it is. It happens. We don't know why, but it does happen. Go get it checked out. LowTUSA.com. They got a place in Chesterfield. They got a place in South County. I did it. It was so simple. Walk right in. They take you in a room, you tell them exactly what went down, you give blood, you get your results back that same day, and this is covered by insurance. Why go to any other store and try to buy anything else that you don't know what you're putting in your body? This is all leveled out. You know exactly what's going on with your body. You get blood work done every couple of weeks, so you know exactly what's going on from your testosterone to your liver to everything. So go in there, lowtusa.com, check out their website, go check it out. It's so easy, so simple, and it's a game changer and a life changer. And most of all, a relationship changer.
That's Cam Jantz along with TJ Moe, John Hadley, and Annie Gates. I'm Eric Messersmith. Mike Martz, former Ram coach, going to join us coming up next. We are at Johnny Londoff Chevrolet right off of 270 here in Forest, and it's the Hard Line on 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM, and InsideSTL.com. Now here's Hannah with a 590 Sports Report.